Christ is risen from the dead, trampling down death by death, and on those in the tombs bestowing life. Jesus, having risen from the tomb as he foretold, granted to us eternal life and great mercy. Truly he is risen. I'd like to welcome Father Emmanuel Lycopandis, a parish priest at St. Demetrios Church in Moonee Ponds, who is a graduate of St. Andrew's Theological College and is also a chaplain for Victoria Police here in Melbourne, particularly for the station at Moonee Ponds and that region there. Father, welcome on behalf of all, and Kali Dinami.
Thank you. Thank you, Father Chris. Father Chris has put a table here for me. I was actually going to have some samples, but unfortunately, my drug dealer got caught on the weekend, so we had to foretell that part of the program. But drugs, it's a big issue. It's an issue that, as a parish priest, it's confronting me nearly every day with one of my parishioners or so forth, not just one, but particularly it's very bad. It's something that we sort of have to start addressing more likely to our youth. It's always been there. I guess it was less, but now it's more in our face, and they're trying to make it more acceptable within society that it's okay and so forth. So for that reason, I've decided to sort of talk about this issue, which is very sad and very dangerous for us. So if you're hoping to hear something spiritual, I do apologise. So for that reason, there is, but hopefully it will enlighten you on what drugs is. Starting off, I just want to explain to myself and how I've been used to drugs. I've never been a taker, thank God. But when I finished the college from 1998 till 2003, I used to work in the emergency department at Royal Melbourne Hospital. I was a theatre technician, and we used to get a lot of cases coming through the hospital with people having drug problems, and it was my first-hand experience. It opened me up, it opened up my eyes, and more within the parish after 2003, I get a lot of people around about this time of night, if I'm staying behind, coming in, asking for help and assistance, and I've just sat down with them, and I've asked them, and they've also enlightened me about things. The one thing I've actually learnt is that someone who is on drugs will either tell you the complete truth or a complete lie. That's the two sides of seeing. So, what is drugs? There are different types of drugs. There are, of course, the medicine drugs, which we go to the doctor and gives us a prescription, and we go to the pharmacist and get it. Sometimes in hospital, different types of drugs, which are acceptable and which we need. I know a lot of my parishioners need their heart tablets or their diabetes tablets or the cholesterols, and for that reason, this type of medicine is much more acceptable. There is also the legal drugs that we can go and apply from over the counter or even at supermarket, such as Panadol is the classic example. So, I mean, you won't get arrested having a packet of Panadol, but they are also considered as a drug. And on this note, if you have more than 8 Panadols a day, you are actually considered as a drug user. So be careful so you don't sort of go over your prescription. Alcohol and cigarettes are considered a drug because it's more of addiction. You can also put gambling in there as well, but it's not as bad. Then there's the enhanced drugs. We all remember the Essendon Football Club saga last year, yes? You know, and also Ben Johnson, the famous 100-metre sprinter. And then there is the illegal drugs, which I'll be touching upon today. Now, because I didn't have the samples for you, I will be going through the most popular drugs that we actually have in our society here in Melbourne. There is a lot of them, but these are the most popular. The first one is marijuana, otherwise known as dope or cannabis. And it is a drug that if you have a police record, you can sort of not only lose your job, but you won't be able to travel overseas. They take it very strict in other countries for those who are actual thing. You've gone too far, Nick. That's it. So, marijuana, the cannabis plant. Have you all heard of hemp? Hemp is such as clothes, rope. It's very durable. It comes from the same plant, but it's not, you can't smoke it, so you don't get the same effect. There's a hemp company, Margaret River, where I went there once and they sort of explained it. Marijuana, the actual, if Nick can go back to up one, is that top part of the plant is what is the most popular, which is actually smoked. That is the one that gives the people the high. It is not the whole stem of the plant itself. It's that little top part which they sort of give out. Now, also known as weed, but it processes a high. Now, whenever you smoke it, you get a high, which this high, such as all the other drugs, you get a high, surprise, surprise. It more gives you a relaxing feeling. Marijuana gives you more relaxing, happy, and also you become very talkative. So if I wanted to be very relaxed tonight, I would have had my smoke and I would not shut up. But the problem would have been, I would not have been on this topic. I would have just been blabbing. But the problem of using this as an intoxication, when it intoxicates, because it sort of slows you down, it makes you happy. The problem is that you sort of start losing your self-control, your coordination, standing up. And what makes things even worse is that once you get off it, you always feel hungry. So so compared to the other drugs where it actually makes you lose weight, this one actually helps you put on weight. For this reason, the drug itself, the smoke, actually enters into your bloodstream. It is absorbed into your bloodstream. And the chemical, which is known as THC, goes into your brain and flood the receptors. Now, our brains have receptors. And these receptors, which are in our brains, are actually the ones give us the senses. And it's with this that sort of calms down the person. And it gives him that very, very high effect. The problem with it is that for short term, it reduces our coordination. It gives the person bloodshot eyes, anxiety. But in the long term, you'll have problems such as schizophrenia and also paranoia kicking in, which is a big problem. And not only that, coordination. And it is very easily detected through urine sample and also blood samples. And for this reason, a lot of people who try to get jobs within mining companies, they always have to go through a urinary screening test to sort of see if they've smoked the drug on the weekend. How many states do we have? In the 8 states of Australia, 6 states, only 1 state has made it legal where you can grow one plant in your backyard for yourself, and that is South Australia, and I'll just say that. That explains a lot about the South Australians. The next drug, ecstasy, the Eki-Pil. This is the party drug. This is actually very, very known as the party drug. This is the one that you'll probably get whenever you go into a rave dance or into a nightclub, very popular there. On that picture, you will see that the ecstasy pill comes in different colours because each one has a different effect. It has a picture on it on both sides. One side, it tends to be a Mickey Mouse cartoon character, which sort of shows the heaviness of it. They've sort of marked it at their own. On the bottom side, it actually has a producer stamp, the person who made it. As Father Chris said, we're both police chaplains, and I was actually talking to the police officers because my district looks after the showgrounds, and they have a lot of rave parties there. When they walk in, they search everybody, and the sniffer dogs, I'll catch one or two, but the problem is that it's the people who are organising, distribute, they have their own little distributors to keep the people going all night. Because with ecstasy, I will not pronounce the word, but it's an MDMA, so which is a part of the drug, methamphetamine that sort of goes into it. So they're producing this as they will produce anything else. And the E-pill or the Eki-pill, whatever it goes, gives this type of effect to us. It usually gives us a rush within 20 minutes of taking the Eki-pill. They swallow it. So you don't smoke it, you don't chew on it, you don't sort of keep it underneath your tongue. You have to swallow it. And it can last up to 8 hours. There has been reported cases of symptoms lasting up to 32 hours. So, taking one pill, between 8 to 32 hours, you can be jumping and running around. Whenever you take it, you feel more alert, energetic, affectionate. And it suppresses any appetite. So for this reason, a lot of people who take it, they'll be running around, jumping around, having a good time and not feel one bit hungry or tired at all. And that's the effect that the ecstasy pill actually gives. Now, because you swallow it, it goes directly to your central stomach, which from there goes and gives the receptors into the nerve system. At time, whenever people take the ecstasy pill, they'll sort of tend to feel very hot and their body temperature increases. It has an effect on the blood pressure. This is why many times when they do take it, they actually drink a lot of water with it. Short-term effects is it? Increases heart rate, overheating, jaw and teeth clenching. This is because they're just excited, you know, they just want to go and do something, you know, and just run around. And nausea. Sometimes if somebody has a very weak stomach, they'll be vomiting a lot at those symptoms. So those are the symptoms that they actually give. Working in the hospital, the Etihad Stadium used to have a lot of rave parties back then. And I remember that they used to bring in young kids, younger than me. I thought that I was young at 35, but these 20-year-olds were actually coming in. And they were having a heartbeat of 120 beats per minute, which average 72, I think, is about right. They were having close to nearly double the heartbeat. Now, the doctors couldn't really do nothing to them. What they used to do is put a saline in them, so hopefully it can reduce the heartbeat and make it back to a normal rhythm. Once they used to wake up, they just used to pull out their IV drip, jump out of the bed and walk out of the hospital. So it sort of gave that agitating feeling as well afterwards. It increases the risk of body heating, causes the organs to fail, break down, and eventually to heart to stop if it is not treatable. So somebody who is very weak, or if you have a Greek coffee, go to a rave party and have an Eki pill, you'll be bouncing very hard and your heart might not even take it. Unfortunately, one of the symptoms that come out is antidepressant when they get off it. They always become sad and very sorry, and they apologize and so forth. But the greater risk of the physical and the psychological harm of the ecstasy pill is for those who follow the is heart disease, diabetes, believe it or not, epilepsy, liver problems, hypertension, panic attack, and history of mental illness. Because all these go into your bloodstream, it goes into your nervous system, every piece of drug, and for that reason, that drug actually suppresses our thinking and mode and sort of gives us this effect. There's always an outcome. The next drug we shall talk about is the most popular one at the current moment. It is ice. And one of the biggest side effects with ice is that those ice, you can actually smoke it, and you can inject it. Most people take it in that little crystal form that it is in that form there because it's very hard to actually smoke it, because when you smoke it or inject it, you lose approximately 30% of the drug. So you'll lose a bit of that highness it actually gives you. So most of the people, whenever they take ice, they actually just put it either on their tongue or try to have it within their mouth so it can sort of melt like any other ice little cube, so then it can sort of hit that effect that they get. Now, ecstasy pills, ice, speed, and cocaine are in the same family group. They use virtually the same drugs. The difference is that ice is in the most purest form. Speed and ecstasy pills, actually, they've added in more chemicals to those drugs. Now, those chemicals, there's a whole range. There's even detergents, there's even washing powder, liquid going. To do these drugs, you have to have a pharmaceutical or a chemistry degree behind you in the way that they do it and cook them. Not anybody can sort of open up a little shed and be able to do it, because these drugs are actually designed that way. Now, with the physical effects, it's other known as crystal meth. This is also the drug known as crystal meth. Ice also has physical effects. It gives us, first of all, that rush within the person. It does not suppress. It does not calm. It gives you more a rush, so it builds up your anxiety and sort of builds up your thing, and it can last between 4 to 12 hours. So 4 to 12 hours, the ice users experiment. They're feeling exhilarated, increase arouse activity levels, so they feel all happy and they can hug everybody, and they feel more awake. And of course, it suppresses the appetite, just like it did with the other drugs as well. So usually people who tend to use these drugs, they actually tend to lose a lot of body fat, a lot of weight as well. But it's not a natural way of losing it, because if you ever experience them, you'll see that their jaw starts sticking out. It's a very unhealthy way of losing. When ice is based, it's used, the receptors of the brains are flooded. Again, it's always those receptors which are compressed and pushed within the head. As more is taken, the receptors can be destroyed. Now, this is a big problem, because it can lead to the point where you can no longer feel pleasure. What does that mean? When somebody decides to come and tickle you and decide to sort of make you laugh or tick your feet, you won't be able to feel that. But to feel that happiness and to be happy, you'll be needing to take more and more of the ice so you can get at it. The side effects, and I want you to probably look at the last three on the bottom, where it's psychosis, panic attack, out of control aggression, itching and pricking and scratching of skin. Those three are the most common ones of the ice users. Now, the very last one, itching and picking and scratching the skin. When people take ice, they tend, because the body heats up, they're always in their short sleeve, but when they sort of look at their hands, they go a bit delusional and they think that there's a bug crawling underneath their skin. And what they tend to do, or they think that there's something there, like a little stone they have to get rid of. And what they do is they tend to pick at their skin. But they pick at their skin, and they don't feel no pain, because they've destroyed the receptors in their head. And they pick at it, where they start to create their own cuts and scabs on their skins. So a lot of times, one way to see an ice user, a very big ice user, is looking that they've got scabs either on their faces or on their hands area, that they believe that something is in within their, under, just underneath their skin, walking around. The out of control aggression is that they have a very short temper at that time. A lot of people who have been involved in road rages have been linked to ice users. And of course, when they come to the hospital, they have to tend to sort of tie them down or sort of restrain them in the trolley of in the hospital, because this is a drug that it sort of really takes over your body, and the person who is in that has no control at all. The next drug, known as GHB, out of all the drugs, this is the worst one. Personally, I think this is the worst drug that anybody can be affected by, because with every other drug, you have to voluntarily physically go and get it yourself. With this drug, they can spike it for you. This is what is known as the dape rate drug. And what it's actually used is that it has no taste, and it has no smell, and it has no flavour. It's clear, and it's what is used to spike drinks. We had a case at a Greek nightclub, I don't think it was Guinness, I think it was one of the other one, where the cook hand was actually using GHB to sort of knock out certain contestant girls that were there so he could actually rape them as well. With this drug, it's a depressant. It sort of knocks you out. It's like an anesthetic. And like I say, only a small amount is needed with your drink of the night, whatever it may be. And although it knocks you out, it doesn't stiffen you up, so your muscles are still loose. So virtually, with one drink, with this in it, you're knocked out, you're still standing up. Everybody who looks at you thinks you're drunk, sister. And whenever they think that you're drunk and the boy's holding you out, they say, what a nice boy, he's taking her home. But this is the whole idea of this drug. Because it's so dangerous and it's something involuntary that you yourself cannot take and cannot control, for this reason, I've put it on as the most dangerous. The sad thing about it is that they have never figured out what side effects exist on the long term or short term, because it's not one person who uses it. They tend to use it, pass it around to sort of drug the other person. The next one was one of our most popular here in Melbourne, the opium, the heroin. Now, for those of you, when I was doing this research, I never knew, but heroin is actually a tradition in some cultures to be smoked. Mainly the Afghanistans, Pakistanis, Iranians in that area, they actually smoke opium, which is where the heroin comes from the poppy plant. In Australia, we do have one legal poppy farm that is in Tasmania. And what that farm is that they tend to get from that poppy is the drug out of it, so they can sort of do medicine drugs such as, I forgot the name of it, the one that sort of puts the people to sleep when they do the surgery, midazolam is one of them that actually comes out of it. And for that reason, they tend to use, this is probably the one drug that sort of has a side effect. Now, heroin can be smoked, but more recently, people used to inject it. Very popular within the cultures of the Vietnamese. That's why places such as Richmond, Springvale and Footscray was actually flooded with heroin drugs at one stage, because it was also a cultural thing for them to have it and to smoke it. But most of the people here who used to take heroin, they used to inject it. Now, heroin gives a rush in a few minutes, and it doesn't take long. If you take it in midwinter, it warms up your body, so it gives you a nice little warm, and it also relaxes you. It puts you down to sleep, so you have a good drowsiness and relaxes your body. The problem is that when you relax during this time, and it depends on the amount, they believe that those who took more than 10 mils of this drug actually suicide, or they virtually killed themselves, overdosed themselves by taking this drug. That's why the government sort of to step in to stop this and to reduce the problem brought in the exchange syringe, needle exchange places. And for that reason, they used to give out what is known as the diabetic syringe, which only takes, I think, 2 to 3 mil of that drug, so they wouldn't have overdoses with it. Even if you have a sugary drink or a coffee or caffeine, something, and then take this drug, it causes poison within your body and also not only slows you down, but can also kill you. Now, the problem with this was that there's less and less people taking this drug, because unfortunately those who were on it have passed away. So it's one of the drugs that if it overtook them and they had a very big addiction to it, it used to virtually kill them. For this reason, heroin was a very, very dangerous drug as it was. Other long-time problems with it, such as using it, is not only things such as the mood swings, the depression, the loss of sex drive in men, and even with women who were taking it, babies would sort of drink the mother's milk through the breast and also become drug addicted to the drug as well. The neglect of the general health, which is the main part, and they sort of tend to get what is known as a blood-borne virus disease within them, which means they virtually destroy their kidneys, because the kidney cannot, or the heart cannot, filter the blood very well, and it always brings damages into the heart, liver and lungs area. So this was a slowing time bomb within people. Although it used to make them feel good, it used to sort of relax them, they sort of used to knock down in the city and sort of come down, it used to take its toll. So the government decided to step in and said, we have to stop this heroin. When they started stopping the heroin use, they realized that they were fighting a losing battle. Because someone who used to take it and stops all of a sudden, And because it was within their body system, they could not readjust. It was something that the body wanted. It was something that the body that always drew for them. For this reason, these people used to become, the whole body used to go into a collapse stage, which means they used to go into a very shaking. It used to take them 2 to 4 days if they didn't get their dose to go in. And with that, the craving, they had restlessness, low blood pressure used to drop, and an elevated heart rate, which was quite natural with the low blood pressure. Stomach and leg cramps and muscle spasms used to come in. So virtually they could not walk. They would be stiff and they could not move their arms around and be in a lot of pain and have that spasm. The worst part was that after all that, they would have whatever they ate, it was diarrhea. It was just constant diarrhea that they had with them. For this reason, the government decided to open up to sort of help them, methadone clinics. Have you all heard of methadone clinic? So what actually they used to do is that those who were heroin users, they sort of said, we have to put something back into that body because otherwise they'll just be a wreck, you know, on the street. So they had to go to specialised hospitals where they will sort of put in the methadone, they'll inject it in the same way that they used to inject it in the heroin to hopefully give them some type of good, quotation mark, life or living that they could have. The next drug, speed, which is also Father Chris's cookies. Speed, wheezy, goey, snow, whatever you want to call it, has the problem of schizophrenia, big schizophrenia within that, the sense of alertness. Now, when somebody takes speed, it gives them a good alertness, energy, experience, and this is due to the drug speeding up the messages between the brain and the blood. So it was all fast and it was all hypertensive. Of course, all of a sudden, the heart will start pumping faster. Now, two things that the people used to look out for was the teeth grinding and the jaw clenching was a dead giveaway that the person was actually on speed. Speed had two effects with the food. Although when you're on speed, it will suppress the food appetite, but once you got off it, you had the biggest hunger that you could ever imagine. So it sort of worked both ways. So although the other drugs were more like a problem of losing weight, this one had a reverse effect. You'll lose and then you'll put it back on. A lot of people inject speed or even smoke it. But like I said, they lose a certain percentage whenever they actually do that. Researchers have shown with speed that they become very verbal and physical violent. They link themselves with long-term drug use. So it is something that they can't really take them off and sort of say, have a good life. And they become reckless and have an aggressive, angry behaviour. So this is the one where the person used to sort of come into the hospital and they will take around about 4 of us to hold him down because he'll go beyond his own means to sort of have strength. So 1 year, Father, if you've got nobody to hold the epitaphio, we'll take some speed and we'll just carry it around the block. So that's, you don't know what you're doing and you actually go beyond your means. So for that reason, that's what speed gives you. But whenever you sort of come off it, you'll have an emotional effect and start crying and presbyteria will have to pick you up. Cocaine, which is also otherwise known as coke or the rock or crack, cocaine is a drug that is well more, whenever I hear cocaine, I always associate it with South America. But cocaine is a drug that is only used by the elite people. This is the most expensive of the synthetic drugs, of the man-made drugs. And cocaine is mainly, if you have cocaine, it means you have money. So, and if you use cocaine, you tend to don't have money afterwards because it is the one that sort of costs the most and sort of the one that makes you bankrupt. But with like all the other drugs, it goes into your blood, into the receptors, you destroy your receptors, and then after you're on a high. Now, with cocaine, It goes into what's actually known as a neurochemical. So it goes into your nerve system, if I can put it like that. And it gives people this dilemma that once they're on it, they can do anything. They can't think, they just can do anything. But it's once they sort of get off it, it sort of gives them the biggest heartache of all. The one thing that leads to cocaine is kidney failure. Although it gives the people this great emotional time when they take it, they cannot perform everything. So, for example, somebody on cocaine cannot probably even hold his drink, as they say. He'll find that very hard. And the other bad thing about it is that the nose part, the tissue that's in the nose part here after turning loose, tends to collapse. So you actually lose your nose. So you can all see we've all got a bit of an arch here. So by over time, it gets into your tissues and it actually sort of destroys your bone density. So for that reason, it is very, very, very... it's the most expensive, but it's also the most damaging to your internal organs as well. So on that reason, these are the major drugs that are actually used within our community in Melbourne. So whenever we go and see these people and we ask them, why do you take drugs? Can we have the next slide, Nick? Why take drugs? Now, these are the excuses that have actually came up. Someone had some and I just decided to try it. I've always wanted to try that stuff. All my friends were doing it, so I thought, why not? Bit of peer group pressure. I don't want to be the one left out. It made me feel good. Mainly those who suffer and sort of want to get out away from reality, makes them feel good. All my problems from school, home or life just went away. You know, they will use one of those for that hour or 3 hours or 4 hours. It gave them confidence because it gave them the strength to get up and go raging and do things. Some kids used to tell the parents, you used to do drugs, so why can't I do it? And, of course, the last one is that they just don't want to talk about it. So who do they target? A drug dealer will tend to target someone between the age of 13 and 25. This is the gap where they sort of say it's the most vulnerable age where they can sort of try and get somebody to sort of get into the drugs. Now, they look for certain things. Number one, wealthy, because it costs money. They don't want to go into a poor neighbourhood to sell drugs because they're not going to make their money there. So they sort of look for someone who's got money. That's why certain neighbourhoods which are poor have a high crime rate or robbery rate, because those who are on drugs want to still go to cash converters, get a bit of cash out of it so they can go and buy it. They aim for people with low self-esteem. You know, those ones who, the quiet ones, or at school, they tend to sort of pick them out and they sort of tend to go them. They tend to find that it's quite funny, because whenever I sort of spoke to some police officers about it, they sort of said that the drug dealer tends to speak to the kids and the kids' friends to find out who's the most popular and who's the most unpopular. So then they can sort of, when they go pick up their kids, they can sort of pick them out who's who, and they tend to follow them and to sort of say, here, I know you go to my kid's school like that. So to give them something. Of course, the most popular friend, because he's the one who will have the influence in the peer group pressure to sort of push the others going to it. Partygoers, nightclubs have been actually one of the biggest drug markets where they tend to sort of sell it. And of course, the depressed people. And finally, the gay and lesbian community. Last year with Father Chris, we were together when we had the gay and lesbian officer who actually told me that the biggest users of drugs in this state actually is the gay and lesbian community. I guess they want to escape from where they are, escape from reality. And that's what drugs help them do. They see that they don't have a future or a family to do like that, and they just want to get away and just decide to abuse themselves with those drugs. So how can we, as good citizens and good Christian, help those who are on drugs? First of all, be active within people's lives. Don't just stick to our group. For those of you who are parents here, be very active within your children. Know who their friends are. Listen to your kids, because sometimes with what kids are saying about school, you'll probably pick out that who are the popular kids and who are the influential ones. Be a role model. A lot of people, I know my son had a few football players as role models, but I sort of had to try and sort of change that around for him. So, because it's mainly all these famous people that get caught up, because they are the ones that with money, that's where the drug dealers will go. Be honest with them, straightforward. Pick your moment whenever you want to talk to them. You know, pick the most serious moment. It could be a TV program where they're watching and there might be some drug use and say, look at the side effects of this and so forth. Be calm, never be strict. You know, sort of avoid that conflict. So try and sort of threaten them. Always just keep talking to them, set clear boundaries. I think that's the best way you can go about it, you know. If you're going to go on this path, I don't want you within my house. I don't want you coming here and influencing your sister or so forth. And always focus on the positive of that person when he's not on the drugs, to sort of say what a good person he is. Now, the consequences when somebody does take drugs. First of all, it is the law. The one thing I can guarantee you, you cannot escape the law. Once you get that criminal record, or once you get that drug use record, you're going to have problems. I mean, even today, to work with children, you have to have a children's check. If they see that you've got one drug or criminal, you've lost that job. So you can kiss your job. So first of all, you've got the law to deal with. Secondly, if you're a student, these drugs will sort of just destroy your education. A lot of uni students, you know, with the use of drugs from doing something like law, have ended up coming out being a diploma of commerce, which is really not there for them, what they're aiming for. You lose your friends, family, which is, I know a lot of family have sort of told their kids, leave. You know, they've cut their children out of their very own family. Of course, your health problem, because these things do not improve your health, they actually destroy your health. Employment, nobody wants to hire a drug user. And of course, to use these things, you need money. So rather than your bank account going up, it always go down. So what are the remedies? So what actually happens whenever you're on drugs? Can you get off it? Unfortunately, there are no remedies. Unlike whenever we have a cold, we can go to the doctor and he can give us a flu vaccination or help us. There's really no tablet or no one thing that can actually help us to get off the drugs. More importantly is that it is only their own self-will. If they want to get off drugs, they can probably fight it. They'll have all these side effects to contend with. They'll have all these cramping, vomiting, nausea. They'll have all these cravings to go back to it. But it is a self-determined will. To be quite honest, we can't really be there and sort of give them, we can only give them the support and help them out in that difficult time. But to give them something and to help them through it, it has to be their own will. Now, in Serbia, they've got a fantastic way of helping people, is that, of course, the war broke out in the former Yugoslavia Republic, and there have been very empty monasteries. Some monks have actually taken drug users to these remote monasteries, not Geelong because that's very populated. I'm talking about remote places. And they've actually said, if you want to get off drugs, come with us. And they try and make them live a monastic life, having chores, growing their own garden, and they have no contact with the outside world. And because they have no contact with the outside world, they don't get no drugs coming in. There have been those who have decided to get up and run away because they've had the cravings, but there's really nowhere to go. You know, they can be running for one day before they see the first farm. It's been a bit harsh, but at the same time, these monks are trying to help these people to come out. That's the only thing within the Orthodox Church worldwide that I've actually seen that actually helps people who are on top. There's one in Cyprus. Is it the same model? Yeah, that's what this, yeah. So that's inside. So that's two. A yes, Gepi. So these are two now that actually do. They do the same there, iconography. They learn how to do their plant for themselves, food for themselves, because milk the cows and so forth. And the other one, which the Victorian government tried to do, was isolation. Try and put these people in isolation. And the problem was is that once they put them in isolation, it was the human rights all got up and started arguing about it, because it was not humane, the way to lock them up in a padded room and sort of keep them there for 5 days and just feed them through a little hole. And for that reason, that didn't work. Now, have you all heard of the Church of Scientology? Yeah. Now, they have an organization called Narconon. And that was one way of helping people of getting off drugs, naturally. The problem with Narconon was that it doesn't exist anymore, is because those who used to go, it was like the Alcoholic Anonymous meetings, was that those who used to go in there, they used to make friends with the other people who they had the same drug dealer. You know, where did you used to get your drugs from? John? Yeah, I know John. I got mine from John as well. But then whenever one of them used to turn around and John used to say to them, there's this guy who still owes me money. Oh, you can find him at the Church of Scientology. He goes there Tuesday nights for things. So they used to, around about two or three people got heavily bashed by the drug dealers from there. But the other thing was, they used to meet up with other people and they used to try new drugs together. So that unfortunately has collapsed it, and now they knew they have to change the memento, then do it one-on-one. It is a very hard process, but like I said, if the person doesn't want to get off drugs, it's a really losing battle. I mean, they've called us to go do exorcism on this person and he's all doped out. It's like, it's not going to work. You know, what the process. We can pray for that person, but at the end of the day, may God give him the will and the grace to sort of, he has to fight it himself. That's his cross he has to bear in life. It's very hard for, let it be a priest or even a family. It's more harder for a family member who has somebody with drugs within the house. You know, your own child stealing from you just to go and feed his obsession and crave. So I know there will be a lot of questions. That's why hopefully I've kept it short and sweet. And I'm opening up the floor to any questions. I know we have a doctor in the house who could probably help us out as well. Is there any questions you want to ask?
About that, I walked in a little bit late. I don't know if you mentioned any preventative ways we can help, especially with the youth, to prevent them from falling into drugs.
There was the age group is how they sort of, who are targeted. Now, these people who are actually targeted is what they aim for. And the only preventative way is be very close to them and how to support them during that. The most thing is that 13 to 25-year-olds are what they aim for, because once they get them hooked, they know they have them for life. They won't aim for a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old. They'll aim for someone who is very young, very vulnerable, and that's the age where they sort of tend to target, and they know this is the ages once we get them on, because they all think they're invincible. Even I thought at that age I was also invincible. I ended up becoming a priest. But that's the age they sort of pick on, and because they know is once they get them hooked on and addicted, they have them for life. They've got a good customer.
Both of my children take dope, and I try really hard and encourage them not to. But I just thought you can't make kids come, you know, to talks. But if we had people who were users, who got out of it, if they can give testimonies and stories, and it might help the young ones think twice about even starting it, you know, that type of stuff.
As a parent and going through this pain, and thank you for saying that, look, the best way you could probably try and sort of fight it is get those people who are on it, who have con off it, to come around and sort of speak to your kids.
I don't really know any, though. I'm just wondering, as a community, as a church community, if we had any people who have been through it and have successfully got over it, if they could talk to youth. I don't know any personally.
I have met three or four people who have came off various type of drugs. Mm. One of them being marijuana. But when this person comes to speak to your kids, and like I said before, if they're not prepared themselves, and if they don't realise what they're doing is wrong, then it's a losing battle.
But I thought if we targeted the 13-year-olds, you know, in schools and...
Well, that's something the education department has to do.
Yeah, no, but I thought it's a Greek church community, you know. It could be like something that our church does as well.
Well, no. here we are tonight. Yeah. 160,000 Greeks, and there's probably just 50 of us.
There is drug education in schools, and it's an Australian initiative, and it's been probably 10 years now, and it was secondary, but in the past 4 to 5, there's intensive intervention from year 5, so 10. And in most schools that I've been involved with, from prep to 2, so little ones, there is some sort of drug education, but it has become more proactive. And it is, it doesn't matter which government's in, so it's not political. Drug education is something that every child in Australia has some sort of program. And we do bring people into schools who have been users, and that's very powerful, and we start that from about year 7. But then again, it's what Father said. I have worked with children that, I call them children, 15, 16-year-olds, and unless they want to stop, they won't. And even young adults, unless they're still on that high. And there is one young man that I've been talking to, and he's 21, and he's just hit rock bottom, and that's when he's decided to kind of come up on his own. But it's really hard. I think it's one of the worst things I see in education is young children who are drug users. Yeah.
Just with the police, what are their perspective on things you mentioned about, you know, the problems getting worse and worse instead of better? So do they have any solutions or any recommendations that you've heard, Father?
From my limited experience with the police force, the more police gets advanced in tracking drugs, the more the drug dealers are trying to sort of advance their way to get away from the police. When somebody gets in the wrong crowd, now, have you seen Underbelly? Now, all those people lived around Mooney Ponds area, okay? Carl Williams himself lived next door to my Sunday school teacher. And the Morans lived next door to my church's president. So when I used to go visit these people, there were other people sitting on their porches. So all of a sudden, you know that these people have association with them. Once you get picked up by police, the police will always pick you up on the same. They'll always look at you, you know, where there's trouble, it's that little drug dealer over there. And they'll always pick on it. So you're always targeted. The police themselves will sort of do their role and sort of try and protect the community. But once you get involved, and it can be from somebody doubling on Crime Stoppers to being caught in the wrong crowd to be detected by one of their sniffer dogs or one of their devices that they have, you are a marked man. And it's very hard to shake that tag off your back. It's just like they know that you are a user, so you can lead them to the dealer. And they'll try and do whatever they can within their means to sort of either scare you or even use you and even take you to prison. So the best thing to do is not do it and not get on the wrong side of the law. It's quite simple as that. I mean, all these series have shown all these big drug dealers in Victoria, they've been caught. Carl Williams, the Tony Mockbell. There'll be new ones that will actually take their place, and those people will also fall as well. The one thing that's very scary is that the Victorian government has given the authority that whoever the process of crimes, what is known, whoever is a drug dealer, is once they get caught, no matter what house they've got, no matter what car or even their children, it all gets confiscated. And you can go to Pickles Auction and pick up a nice fridge for $20 or $50 that have been picked up, but it's don't get on the wrong side of the law. So they can sort of get the information who else is on it. So
If I may say with all due respect, I think there's a few people in this auditorium today in God's home that seek answers on how to deal with whether it's a child or someone that you do know that's on drugs. I think it's a cop-out to mention, hey, it's a very difficult thing, because I like to keep things quite simple, and I think the most simplistic attitude towards drugs is, how do you heal a broken heart? Because if you do, as you say, if you bring up your slide where you talk about how do you deal with these drug users, be patient, timing, it's a resourcing of a very epicentral question, and that is, what is the fundamental issue or problem at hand? And today's youth, if we can use that bracket of age group that you did bring to the forefront, I think the youth of today are quite individuals. There's been a lot of discussion on bullying and what have you, so it's not like it was back 20, 30 years or even as early as one generation prior. Kids are individuals today, and I think the fundamental commitment to, if they're a drug user, and if this can be taken on board by the lady at the back there, because I think she feels that she needs to seek a question and answer, is who heals a hurting heart? And there's only one, and we're in his premises at this moment. You can ask any doctor. Someone breaks their arm, we can fix that. You've got diabetes, here, take the pill. But who heals a broken heart? And you'll find the epicenter of every drug user. And I'm sure you do a lot of counselling work in prisons and in hospitals.
There was a point where you touched there with broken heart, and there was, have you ever heard of Hillsong? It's like the Born Again Christian, it's a big group, very active. Hillsong, it's a Christian group. They've actually taken a lot of these people and sort of bring them closer to God. Now, the problem has been here is that they've taken somebody who, and I sort of say well done to them, you know, I take my hat off them because they've done a better job than me. And they've brought them into Christ, they've sort of put them into their church, they've sort of brought this happiness to them. So they're sort of, in one way, this person starts to feel accepted. But the problem is that once that person gets scandalized in that area or where he is, let it be within a church, within a scout group, within a football club, once he gets scandalized, he will revert back to that old ways. You know, it's quite easy for them to revert back. And to be quite honest, if they don't have their own 24-hour mentor, superhero, somebody who's beside them, and that person can only be either a parent or a brother or a sister or a good friend that could help them during this difficult journey, where they can open up to and be with them, then after, it's very hard for the family or anybody to keep them going. Because a lot of times when they've tried to get off it, the smallest thing can just set them off. They can throw their hands in the air and say, "If this, I was better off." One drug dealer that we always sort of support at Mooney Ponds, who always comes around to see us, he said, "I had more support when they were trying to get me off drugs. Now that I'm off it, I've got no support. I might as well go back to it and get all the support I need." He can't get a house now. He can't get rental. He can't get a job. He can't even buy his own food and so forth, because you see him that the way he is. And he sort of says, "When I was on it, I was getting all that. Now that I'm off it, there's nobody here to keep on supporting me or keep on going." And this is where you can't be next to somebody on a Sunday morning or 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. They need somebody who can be next to them during this whole journey. And it's the hardest thing. Sunday we had the gospel of the paralytic man who said to Jesus, "I have no one to help me. I have no one to put me in the pool." Loneliness is the biggest disease. And when they get off that drug, they feel lonely again. They go back to that low self-esteem because everybody knows that I was a drug user. Nobody wants to associate with me because they think I'm going to shoot up in front of them. And that's where they really need somebody to sort of pull them through.
Drugs first. I think that's...
It's working.
Thank you very much. get them off the drugs first, and then the rehabilitation to it, it also exists in the spiritual realm as well. Yes, you need to guide their hand. You need to provide them to a commitment. You need to be here every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. We need to have a 10-minute coffee. So you need to provide a commitment. Just like drug using is a regular occurrence, you still use that premise or structure in your rehabilitation because they're used to that. The thing that's different is a substance and a spiritual commitment in what we find and what we have here in our church availability. Okay, so the object, if you like, and if I can use that in his tomb under his house, it's identical. There is a principal subject and the routine already exists. I know I'm going to go get my drugs on a Monday night, Saturday night, Friday night, get paid straight. There's a regular routine, so you use that structure in your rehabilitation. But even what you said, the first part was get them off the drugs first. Absolutely, the discipline, the conditioning is critical.
You but said, I hopefully got my underline is that the only way that they can get off it if they want to.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're not going. We're not
going. If they don't want to, what you're saying now is just a waste of time.
Not necessarily, because it's like a footballer that goes to training. If he can't kick with his left foot, he keep training with your left foot until you can kick with your left foot. Otherwise, you can't be an AFL player. It's been aligned with where you want to go in your rehabilitation to say, yes, I do. You must want it. You first need to admit that you have a broken heart. They don't go around thinking they've got a broken heart, but through the series of questions and your counselling, you come to a commitment of saying, hey, here's the disease. The disease is there's a broken heart. This is troubling you. Let's see how we can get out of this trouble that you feel. You know, I was being very fortunate. I've met up with an AFL footballer the other day, and he has struggling with kicking goals on game day. And I basically gave him some advice, and he tried it out at training, and he gave me a call. He says, it was amazing what you said. And all I said was, when you're lining for goals, your thoughts must be, and it's probably the beginning to his spiritual realm to say, your thoughts must be, hey, these negative thoughts don't belong to me. They are to leave now. He doesn't know where we're traveling with this advice to him. But just a simple thought connotation that he's regularly saying, he starts to believe it without him accepting the fact that it's the little demons in his head that are keeping him away from kicking that goal regularly. Hopefully we win the grand final because of it.
So just with that gentleman who mentioned the footballer who wants to learn to kick with his left foot, it's a matter that he wants to learn to kick with his left foot. If he didn't want to learn to kick with his left, it wouldn't happen. It's the same with a drug dealer. He has to want to get off drugs. That's right. Yeah, but the footballer's going to benefit from that because he wants to do something. The drug dealer doesn't want to do it.
God never abandons nobody, but also God has given us the free will to choose what we want to do and how we want to do it, if we want to follow his way or not. For somebody who has chosen to go against his will, he's ready to accept that person's forgiveness and bring him back. But it is up to that individual. We can all be there for one person. We can all help out. We can do routines, have them here and so forth. There was a beautiful priest in Sydney who helps a lot of the poor people. And they tend to go to him a lot of times. They want to sit down to him. And there's also drug dealers. But do you know why they sort of tend to go to him? Because they know at the end of that session, they might get something, like a food voucher. They can't use that on drugs, but they can use it to buy their food. And with the money that they're getting from Centrelink, they can buy their drugs. So they're really, how do you use the word koroidepsi? They're cunning.
So it's this, you know, at the end of the day, whenever you sort of see somebody who comes to you and says and asks for your help, you have to run as much as possible. But if you see that they're not changing, because St. John Chrysostom says, before you give the alms, before you help something, make sure you sweat to think where it's going to go. Is it going to go to something good and have a fruitful end to this person, or is it going to be something that they expect? Because a lot of these drug dealers, like, I'm sorry to say, but they come in, I need money for the nappies for my kid. My mum died in Shepparton, I need petrol to go with my car out to Shepparton. And to be quite honest, when I spoke with other agencies, they sort of said, just have a Woolworths or a Coles voucher, $20. That's like that. Well, they can't buy cigarettes with them, $20. So it's enough for fuel. It's enough to buy a pack of nappies. It's enough to buy food. I got a whole heap because I was expecting all these people who came and asked, and I was giving them out. 3 years ago, I've still got another four in my top pocket because they know now we're not giving out cash. So they've gone somewhere else. And these were the people coming to me saying, help me. That's why from my experience as a priest, I saw the cunningness and I sort of said, how else can we help them? And I realised that the only way that they can help, and doctors say, if they don't want to get off it themselves, you're trying to build. You can put things in their mind, you can sort of put them. But once they take that drug, they've suppressed it, they've got rid of it. They'll try and avoid you, they'll try and go somewhere else. And so forth. So it is good what you're saying, and it's a fantastic role model that they all have the faith in God, they come to his house, and that broken heart that can be amended within the house. But it's how do we bring them here is the thing that we are frustrated, is how to help them to realize what they're doing is wrong, because when they take that drug, they feel good. Oh yeah, they feel good, you know. A plane can smash next to them. They don't care, man, because everything's all right, man. The dog can talk to them and speak to them in Chinese. It's okay because I feel good. So for that reason, it sort of suppresses and it plays funny things on the mind, these drugs, which is unfortunately very difficult.
I totally understand what you're saying, and that at the end of the day, it does come down to the individual. Like it did, it was their choice to take it in the first place. It was their choice. And it was a choice to get off it as well. I mean, I grew up in total poverty in the western suburbs. I went to Braybrook High. We grew up around Braybrook. And I know father very well. I'm a successful executive in a large corporation. I've got four kids. And I've gone through it. And I was with drugs every day through my high school. My parents used to work, went around. But I had the, how can I say it? I chose not to accept drugs. I was forced to try to get into it. I used to see it. I used to get held up with knives. But I chose not to. I was strong enough. I was lucky. Now, I think it's very disappointing to see there's not many people here today, but I'm here as a parent, and I think it's important, especially these days, you know, this was 20, 30 years ago when I used to go to school, but times have changed. I think it's more prevalent now. There's more pressures in life now than existed when we grew up. So for those of us who have young kids, I think from what I'm hearing today, it's very important. Not everyone's strong. Some people lose their way and they choose to take drugs because for whatever reason. So it's important to be in their lives. I totally agree with your father. To try to, you know, be aware of what they're doing and to educate them. I think that's a very important takeaway for those of you who have young kids or even friends. Not all of us, as I said, are strong, and sometimes people choose to themselves for whatever reason. Yeah, I totally agree. At the end of the day, it's your choice to get off it as well.
I think as the years go on, I think there'll be less people using drugs because our children, my children, probably Harry's children, have got access to the computers, to the internet. And when my daughter was helping me to set this up, we'll think of putting the before and after effects of photos. If you just Google drug users, there's before and after effects of photos. And my daughter just seeing those photos really turned her off. you know. So I think it's what Kerry said, the education part. I think if we get them before the age of 13 and sort of say drugs are bad, you know, and sort of just put that into their mind and sort of be able them to do the research. And because, I mean, my kids go to a public school and yet they have to have an iPad, you know, and they can look it up themselves and sort of, and as a parent, be on top of them and guide them through them. That's the best remedy to sort of say drugs are bad. Your body is that of the Holy Spirit. Do not destroy it. It is a sin to destroy your body, especially with the grace of the Holy Spirit, putting all these artificial and bad things in. And I think that's the best way that we can sort of start promoting and sort of helping next generation, which I think, and I pray that it is not as bad as what we're currently living to. I think a couple of years ago was the worst epidemic that we had in Melbourne, that it was the highest problem rate that existed in Melbourne was drug use. The problem was drugs.
Christos Anesti.
Alithos.
When you're a Christian, you obviously hang around people that maybe don't go to church as often as you or don't participate really in a church life. And regardless of the age, you may know someone that does drugs. And we'll give an example of marijuana. And then they're about to light up their joint. And before they do, they go, God created this weed. So if he created it, it's good. So, you know, I'm going to smoke it. So as a Christian, sometimes you might find it hard to answer because that could be them, in a way, speaking to you for help or whatever it may be. And, you know, you don't know what to say. Yeah, God created marijuana, yes, but, you know, he also created water. If you drink 1,000 liters of water, you'll die if you, you know. So what would someone...
I had somebody said the very same thing to me. Do you know what I did? I went and got a packet of Tallyhos, which is the wrapping paper that they wrap tobacco in. And I wrapped in there one day, oregano. He came back to the church and I said, I've got a joint for you. He freaked out. He freaked out. And I gave him the joint. He lit it up. He started coughing. He goes, what's this? Because he always used to say that word. God invented marijuana. It grows freely on the hills in Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan and all that. He was well versed. And so I gave him the oregano joint. Of course, he started coughing. He couldn't. I go, can't you handle this? He goes, what is it? I go, God made it. Then smoke it. He looked at me, and I've never seen him since. It was oregano that I had put in the thing. These are petty excuses. These are petty excuses. God put it upon the earth. Yeah, he also put hills and craves. Are we going to go jump off the cliff as well? You know, it's petty. Like, the thing is that sometimes they make these excuses for yourself and myself to feel guilty because they put God in it. But at the same time, tell them to go for a swim in the Adelaide River in Northern Territory because we also made crocodiles. As well, so it's how we decide to choose to take it. The only thing you can say to him, yes, he did create the marijuana, but he also created side effects as well. And I think as we stand, the person that sort of comes to me and sort of sees me and sort of there's a few Christian boys that are trying to help another boy get off it. And that other boy sort of says, I don't know how they can't take it. I go, because they've got self-control. You don't. And he's starting to realize that them by not taking it, they can control themselves. He can see that he's weak like that. And sometimes when he feels weak, to make the others feel weak, he'll try any manipulative way to make excuses for himself. But you brought back some memories with that one. So next time, give him a joint of... oregano or basil leaves, and you tell him that God made this as well, and see how far he actually gets through it.
I think we need to also realise what the effect is on the family. It's not just the drug addict who has the problems. And a lot of them, the ones I've had contact with, I usually say to them, what's your real pain? Where's your real pain that you're numbing it with drugs or alcohol? And a lot of the people that I've had over the last 20-odd years, a lot of the boys, it's a lot of the time it's because they've had low self-esteem. And a common denominator a lot of the time is they've been bullied or put down by their parents, by their father. You're no good, you didn't go to uni, you're on a dikiworo. And this kid might be a car mechanic, or he might be fixing cars or an electrician. But the people need that high self-esteem. Get dit up your cosmos, my son's not going to uni. So I've had other kids who are pushing themselves to go to uni to study something that they don't want, but their parents are pushing them. And I've helped a few kids not commit suicide or try and get off drugs because they're pushed, because they're not really loved and accepted, truly loved. It's conditional love. So maybe people who are parents can be careful of burdening their kids with this conditional love. And also sort of throwing, oh, well, God will put you into hell, makes them more despaired. We've had numerous girls as well. One special girl, if you can all pray for her, I won't give you the name. She's been working as a prostitute to pay for her heroin. And she'd come and stay with us quite frequently. I wouldn't have her with other guests. We'd have to put our boundaries around us. We'd lock down the place because we'd know she'd steal from us. But because she's an Orthodox girl, we'd have her coming because she needed to come. And she'd cry and cry, I love my drugs more than I love God. She'd done detox in Israel, detox here in Australia, but you can't get yourself off the company, the group of people. You can detox and get off the drugs, but then the default is go to search out those people, and they know where to search them out. So the parents get robbed, bashed up, their house wrecked up a month or so ago. A little yaya came and she was all bashed up by her son. She's got two drug addict kids living at home. And they use her for free board, they use the pension. They've got one of their 15-year-old sons dealing with heroin. He's talking about cones. Oh, I get a cone, I get my friends. And they all bring their druggy mates into her house. She's petrified. She won't get up and leave because she's worried about the 15-year-old that they've got hooked on drugs. They get him to do the dealing because they won't put a young kid in prison. And also a very big problem is a lot of the Greek girls get sucked into a relationship with someone who they think they love them. And unfortunately, a lot of them are Greek boys as well, who may be druggies, but they can see this girl's got her own apartment, she's got her own car, she's got a good job, and they hide from them that they're druggies. And they get free board, they use the girl's car to go around and do their dealing. They use the girl for 3 sex, and this girl thinks that she's going to get married to this boy who really loves her, whether he's Greek or whether he's Aussie or whatever. A lot of the Greek girls are getting dragged into relationships that are no-end relationship. They're just being used. So maybe just anyone who's parents, be aware that just because he's a Greek boy doesn't necessarily mean he's good for your daughter. And they're very good at hiding the drugs. I had one girl bringing in her boyfriend and he was nodding off in the corner. I thought, she said, oh, no, he told me he's not on anything now. I've looked at his arm. He's not shooting up. And I could see scabs on his knuckles. He was shooting up through the veins on his knuckles. You know, others re-offend to get back into jail again. There are a lot of Greeks that are in jail. And I'm not doing it to spare because there are a lot of people who get off drugs as well. So what we need to be is aware, not just aware and tell the kids, oh, don't take drugs, but be aware of how they can do it. If you find money missing at home, if you find jewelry missing at home, if you find, you know, what the kids are up to, look at them when they come home and see what they look like as well. And even if you confront them, and even if you try to be loving and kind, they love their drugs, they love their partying, their lifestyle, their boyfriend, more than they love themselves. So, you know, we need to be very, very careful because a lot of our kids aren't necessarily there to be drug addicts, but they're used by the drug addicts. I've got a lot of girls who can't get themselves off these relationships and they're used by druggies. And these are Greek girls, good Greek girls. These people are very good at saying, I love you, you're beautiful, babe.
It's because the girls love them.
The girls can't even, they're so naive, they can't see that this person is a deceiver. And a lot of them are great boys. Eh? The hot chocolate rapist, who was it? Elinos Tenetone. So, you know, we've got to think amongst our Greek community are a lot of the biggest drug users and dealers.
Of
and, you know, you can't say, oh, Christos Agapai, come to church. They're not interested in church. They come in and see what they can clip you or they pinch something out of your bags.
Actually, we've done a sacrament once and they stole the collection tray from the front of the candles and ran out.
Well, okay, well, that's fine. If they hit you on the head and mugged you for it as well.
Yeah, that part of
it. No. So just be aware of the companies that your kids do. And you don't know where they go out when they go out and who they get involved in. And they get emotionally involved with the relationships. They're using them for sex. And these girls are just hanging out the thing that this person's going to marry me. And these boys, a lot of them, they meet the Peterica, and they say, tika lopedi, they don't realize they're on drugs because they don't look like drug addicts. A lot of people who are working in good jobs are still drug addicts and they don't look like it.
Yeah.
Just prayer, a lot of prayer.
That's why I decided to do this topic tonight, sister, I've seen it firsthand, and to be quite honest, I think a lot of people in our community are hiding and thinking that we don't have a problem.
We do. We've got a big problem. Can I just say there's also, please pray, there's a girl that I know here in Melbourne. She baptised a child in Sydney. The mother's a drug addict and she's prostituting her six-year-old girl up at King's Cross to pay for her drugs. These are Greeks. A lot of the strip joints up in Sydney at King's Cross are owned by Greeks and they're involved with all the drugs and things like that. So Miss Krimas Pufiga Maptinalada.
Social media websites, you mentioned about yourself and your daughter, use of the iPad, which for educational purpose I can fully understand. I'm a person that frequently uses the iPad, computers on the, for work use also too. Seeing what I occasionally do see and hear technologically what goes on out there, how far are the influences through the technological media that we've got these days? What I've seen that time sometimes even scares me to the point where I'm thinking, yes, I've got a Facebook page. Yes, I've got things that I do want to make available for people for reference purposes, and predominantly, as you know, Father would know too, is with the photography that I'm involved in. But at the same time, too, there are other aspects that I see, right, that how much does technology these days influence?
It also depends on the parent, on the restriction he has on his child.
That's what I wanted to bring up, that these days that you can be...
Look, the one important thing is that as a parent, you have to be above your children 24/7. That's why a lot of people are complaining that I don't find me at St. Demetrios after 3:30, because once my kids break up, I want to be home with them, see what's happened for the day, be with them. So as a parent, I'm also conscious. If it's quite easy for me to say to my kids, here, take your iPad, they'll sit in the corner, they will be the best kids, they won't say nothing, but I don't know on what site they're on. My daughter wanted to go on this site called Instagram, which is where they take photos because she likes photography like that. And I made it quite clear to her. If you're going on that, I'm going to be your best friend. So I can monitor you and so forth. We actually went one step further. She gave me her passport so I could go in it. Once I saw a stranger, because most of them were her friends from school. Look at this photo of the flower. Look what I took over here. Like that. Once I saw a complete stranger on it, before I could notify her, the school notified me, which I was pleased to hear that the school is also involved. But as a parent, I mean, I could have overlooked that. And the whole idea is that social media can be used for good and for evil. Even sometimes when I go in my own little emails, I have advertising for Russian brides. I say it's too late, I'm already married. I mean, it's really, at the end of the day, it's how you sort of have taught the person or how you've treated the person in your family. Because it comes back to what Yerondisa say, because
the people who suffer the most sometimes is the family. And I congratulate her for saying that because it is absolutely true. And as a family, and if I'm going to be the father of the house, I have to be on top of my children as well, the same as my wife is the mother who nurtures them as well. We have to be careful who their friends are, on what sites they go to, and where they hang out. Not only until the age of 13, even up until the age of their 30, married and out of the house. After that, they can do whatever they want.
My concern was more the, and you're spot on with what you've said, it's the influential element, the influencing element of the whole thing, the whole scope or the whole scheme of things, that how do you educate them not to be influenced, to fall into that trap? And given these days, like I mentioned earlier, I'm a person that's frequent user of the technology, like everybody else is, to a lesser or more extent.
Listen, Kevin, you can't leave it to the school. The school has its part to play, but you can't leave it all.
I'm just saying, in general.
I'll say it again. The internet itself has its good parts and its bad parts. The only type of drug uses I knew was Chicken Chong and Scarface. Everything else I didn't know. But I could search it now and see what GHB is. I can do all that research like it. But at the same time, I can find out where the next rave party is, where I could probably get a Nicky pill.
Education, well. I agree.
So for that reason, look, it's the way you use the instrument that can have the benefits or disbenefits to that person. It's a great tool, the internet and social media like that, to keep in touch. I mean, I talk more to my cousins overseas than what I do with my cousins here. But at the same time, it's also very distractive, and it can also lead me to other ways which won't be very ethical as well. But it comes down to the individual. It always comes back to the individual and the way they use it. Christ is risen from the dead by death, trampling upon death, and to those in the tombs bestowing life. Thank you. Have a good night, and don't do drugs.